The thing that I was feeling this morning, and a little bit yesterday too, just has to do with why abiding in the spirit or walking in the spirit is the way to overcome, the way to overcome everything in us that sin or the world or the flesh can throw at us. And I feel like some of like the reasons for that, or some of honestly the reasons for Christ's coming and dying, well, his living and the way that he lived, and then his dying and his rising again are the reason why we are able to overcome. I know the idea of that is really common and like well known everywhere, that no way we could ever be saved or without Christ coming. But if you ask a Christian why that's true, at least in my case, there was a lot of years where I didn't really have an answer to that. I'm sure I would have said something if you would have asked me that, something that I had read, something that I had heard, but I think that the Lord has just kind of little by little over the last few years kind of given me a little bit more clarity on, I guess you could kind of take it all the way back to why Christ came as a man and what he did through in his life and in his sufferings and in his death and in his resurrection, and then how that affects us and why that is the reason for which we can overcome with him. The general idea in the church today, the most common idea, at least the idea that I've heard the most, and I bump into it in different books that I've read over the years and stuff, is that this wasn't the friend's idea, by the way, but they're one of the only ones that didn't teach this, but the idea that why did Jesus have to come? The answer that a lot of people say, well, because God was angry with sin. He was mad, or he had wrath built up in him. And the only way to extinguish an infinite wrath against an infinitely good being was an infinite sacrifice. And so God's wrath against sin had to be released. And so he sent his sons so that wrath, instead of it's like a big hammer, it's about to come down on mankind, and Jesus jumps in the way and says, "No, smush me instead." And then he smushes Jesus instead, and then God's wrath is like, "Ooh, got that out. You know, I relieved myself of that anger, and now I can actually relate to people in love or in kindness." And being that has necessarily harmed anybody, as long as they have then gone on to the spirit and all of that. But I don't believe that that's actually the truth of why Christ came, or what God had to do, or why God had to send his son into the world. And what redemption is. Redemption, I don't think that redemption is just making God not mad at us anymore. Because even if that was true, what I just said, it still doesn't actually give us a life that is like God's, or give us a nature that won't continually and eternally offend that righteousness of God. And so like Jesus's coming has to be his coming, his living, his dying has to be for, in my view. And again, these are things that I just don't know, how much to share about these things. To me, they're not speculative. They're not theory. They're not just theology. They've become really important because, as I'll maybe get to here in a little bit, this is the reason why. What I'm going to try to explain is the reason why abiding in his spirit will overcome in us what Christ overcame in himself. And so it's not like theoretical for me. It's not just theological for me. It's really, really important and practical. And it also, I think, removes from God a view of him that I don't really think is accurate. Now, let me just say this. The wrath of God is very real. I'm not in any way, in anything I'm going to say, wanting to minimize at all the wrath of God. But I don't believe that that wrath is an emotion in God, or an anger, or an irritation, or a resentment in God towards creation. God doesn't say in John 3:16 that for God was so mad at the world that he sent his only begotten son into the world, to stop his own anger because he was so irritated and resentful towards their sinfulness. He says God loved the world and sent Christ into the world to make a way that man can come out of wrath and into love. Again, the wrath is real. And it is, and if man doesn't come out of that wrath, he will experience, I believe, eternal wrath. And to me, that's very real and very serious. And yet, I don't believe that the wrath itself was something in God's temperament, if that makes sense. Something in God's personal mood or resentment towards man. That's generally how the natural mind thinks of wrath. It's like, yeah, God's irritated and he has to spend his irritation. And I don't think that's what wrath is. Let me tell you what I think wrath is, or at least a general idea as far as I understand. I believe that wrath is contrariness, it's enmity, it's the fact that God exists in one nature. And that man has perverted himself in such a way that he now lives in a completely contrary nature. So that wrath isn't something that's gotten into God. It's something that has come between God and his creation by his creation taking on them a completely perverse and different and contrary nature to him. I hope that makes a little bit of sense. It's when man changes his relationship towards God. It's not when God changes his relationship towards man. You guys follow me at all? Is that making any sense? You could say it this way. Wrath is how sin creates enmity with God. Sin makes it so that man is unreconcilable to God. Sin makes it. Man creating, by man receiving into himself and living into himself sins and sin, the nature of sin, and living in darkness and choosing evil, man puts himself into a condition that God is contrary to. And therefore, there's wrath between God and man. Not because God has allowed into himself feelings like human feelings of madness and anger and resentment and bitterness and desire to hurt. See, God never stops being the same thing he always was. He's always been love and a desire to give himself. That's why he created. That was his motivation to create, was to share his own life and love. But man changed his relationship with God by becoming something that God was at enmity with. And so that's where I at least feel and see. The the what wrath is. And that's why in the Old Testament, God actually warns them about his wrath. It's not because he sees himself like this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing. Like, don't make me mad. I can't control myself. You know, I'll get really angry and I'll crush you. He says, careful, you don't do this, or my wrath will burst out against you. You see, but that's not, I don't think, because God can't control himself. It's because he knows that when man puts himself in a condition by sin and evil and wickedness and transgression, in a condition where he becomes contrary to God, then he is no longer in a condition where he can experience the goodness and the blessing and the benefit of God, of walking with God. He can't, he puts himself into a curse. That's what happened in the beginning. Man fell, chose so to turn from God in self-will, to choose to live in a nature and a life by another seed, and that brought him into a curse, and God pronounced the curse. But God, that curse wasn't, again, it wasn't something of God's own feelings of, I keep using the same words, resentment or whatever, striking man because he had been offended. It was because man had put himself into a con unreconcilable condition with God. And the only thing that he was ever going to, in that condition, the only thing he was only ever going to experience in his relationship with God was enmity. There was no uniting of man with God in that condition. And if man dies in that condition, then then he continues in that enmity. He continues in that hostility or contrariety or contrariness to God. And that's wrath, and that's real, and that should be something that every day of our life we're trying to be saved from the wrath of God, as Paul says, by his life working in us. His life saves us from the wrath of God. Why? Because there's no wrath against that life. There's no contrariety, there's no contrariness, enmity, hostility towards that life. It's kind of, this is a really weird example, but it just came to my mind. It's kind of like if you had a daughter, you know, that you really, all you desire is to love and to hug her, and she turns herself into a wolf. Now, that doesn't change your love and your desire for your daughter, but it dramatically changes the relationship, the compatibility between your daughter and yourself. Now she's a ravenous wolf that is totally contrary to the nature of love that you want to show her. Unable to receive it, unable to show it, unable to walk with you in that relationship. But that's not because you've changed your relationship with your daughter. It's because your daughter's turned herself into a wolf. Well, that's a weird analogy, but it's created contrary. It's created wrath. It's created enmity between you and your daughter. Because she has changed her condition towards you. She has changed the nature in which she is living with you. And in a kind of a weird sense, and maybe that's a little too weird, I don't know, but that's how I have come to understand wrath and the reason why something had to happen in man to remove that wrath of God. And so it's not that, you can follow what I'm saying here, it's not that God needed to cool off somehow. That's not what Jesus needed to accomplish. What Jesus needed to accomplish was something that could happen that could actually m bring your daughter back from a wolf into a daughter. That would remove the enmity and the contrariety and remove completely from man the hostility or the enmity between God and his creation. Not by giving God a way to blow off all of his steam, so to speak, but by bringing back into man a life that God had nothing but union and love with. And so that is why Christ came. He came because the soul of man had to be changed, restored, redeemed, so that everything Now, this is again, this is why I'm getting into the overcoming language. So that everything that was in man that created that hostility, that hostile relationship, that contrariety, that thing that burst out so many times in the Old Testament to manifest that this nature of flesh cannot live in God's presence. You know, like the two sons of Aaron that tried to bring him something that was contrary to him, strange fire, and that fire burst out from God's presence, a living demonstration, powerful demonstration of the fact that that nature and that kind of drawing near to God in that spirit and that contrariness could only ever experience God as fire, consuming fire. What could be done? What could be done to make man to change the relationship, to remove the enmity? Well, I think that is asking that question. Is brings us closer to the reason why Christ came. It's not a way for God to get rid of his own resentment. It's a way for man to have his soul changed so that everything in man, everything that man had allowed into himself of sin, of Satan, of darkness, of evil, of selfishness, of self-will, of pride, of covetousness, everything of darkness that man had allowed into himself could be overcome and put down in man by the Spirit of God. And I think it's because of that that Jesus came, because man needed a spirit in him. Man needed a spirit in him, a power working in him that could overcome all enmity and all sin. So God came in the flesh. God united himself to man. He didn't just come in a fleshly disguise. It's important that we understand that. I mean, he didn't come in just like a man costume. Like not really experiencing the weakness and the fall that man had brought himself into, only just kind of clothed with an outward appearance of man. It wasn't just an outward appearance. He became flesh. He actually joined himself to the fallen condition of man, never submitting to that fallen condition, never uniting with it in his will, never allowing it to have even the slightest bit of place in his will. But he united it to he united God to man in himself. And then he became in himself by his submission to his Father. The overcomer of everything that man had allowed into the fallen condition, he overcame everything that Satan and flesh and temptation and weakness and self-will could throw at him by a continual submission to his Father. That's what he did. He wasn't exempt from temptations. The scriptures say he was tempted in all ways, like we are, and yet without sin. And so here's Jesus coming into our condition, uniting God to that condition, and one by one, not just in his death, but in his whole life too, one by one, overcoming every single thing that man had brought into the human condition through sin. Jesus overcomes temptations within. He overcomes temptations without. He overcomes self-will. He overcomes the will that he felt in himself as a man that didn't always want to do what the Father was doing and that prayed that if there was a way without doing the will of God, that or there was a way in the will of God for him to not die, then he prayed for that. Nevertheless, not as he willed. But as the Father willed, he overcame all the weaknesses that oftentimes draw men or allow men to go into sin, weaknesses of our body, weaknesses of our mind, weaknesses of our emotions. He had anxiety. He had tiredness. He had sorrow. He was called a man of sorrow, acquainted with grief. He wasn't exempt from any of those things. He was persecuted. He experienced evil spirits tempting him in the desert. He experienced evil men. He was tormented by feelings of oppression, whatever it was that caused his sweat to become like drops of blood, resisting, always resisting, but resisting by abiding in the will of his Father. You see, he didn't just pass through human existence, not experiencing everything that causes the everything that man had brought into himself in a fallen condition. He didn't do that. He actually went through it all, but he overcame it day after day, hour after hour, night after night, conversation after conversation, weakness after weakness, difficult sorrows and anxieties and temptations and tribulations and demonic attacks and human attacks and weakness and tiredness and everything that ever man allowed to come into his human condition in his fall. Jesus, day after day, overcame it. And how did he overcome it? He overcame it by a perfect submission to the spirit of his Father. Every day, every way, even the most extreme things that humans can experience. I've never had anguish in my being so strong that my capillaries burst and I drops of sweat like blood. I've heard that's actually a physical possibility. I've heard that that's something that can happen in times of extreme, incredible stress. Your little capillaries at the end of your arteries can actually burst and bleed. That's what Jesus was. That's the resisting of sin. Remember that scripture in Hebrews where it said that with loud cries and groans, he cried out to the one who could take him out of that condition, and he was heard because of his godliness. You remember that verse in Hebrews? I remember exactly where it is. Maybe someone else does. With loud cries and groans, he spent nights, entire nights on mountains praying. Why was he praying? He was praying to never, in any moment, ever, not for a second, allow anything of darkness or of sin unite with it in his will. You see, and that's why he could say at the end when he's going to the cross, he says, the prince of the world is coming now, but he has nothing in me. He has not a single speck of room in my heart that I've ever given him, ever, even once. And that's what his life was. It was, that's what I want you guys, this is the part that really has moved me, because this isn't just what Jesus's life was as a man. This is what Jesus's life is in us, if we will submit to his spirit. And that's kind of where I'm going. His life was a continual overcoming. Remember when he said, in this world, you will have problems and tribulations, but take heart because I have overcome the world. What did he mean by that? I think he meant, I've overcome every single thing that the world can throw at me. Everything, every weakness, every temptation, every emotion, every pain, every trial. Every way that Satan has gotten into this world and can tempt and can try to bring us into his own darkness and his kingdom, I've overcome it. So take heart. Not a single day of my life, not when I was 12, when I was doing the things of my father in the temple, not when I'm 30, when before I started my ministry and no one even knew who I was and I was working in the carpenter shop. Not any time, and I'm about to go to the cross, and even physical death, I'm not going to budge. I'm going to be tortured. I'm going to be whipped. I'm going to be mocked. I'm going to be beaten, and I'm going to be killed on a cross. And not in a single moment, in any moment of my life, am I going to actually be overcome by sin or self or my own will in the flesh. I'm never going to let it happen. And you can take heart. Why? Because I have overcome all of it. And because I'm going to give you my spirit. You see, this is why he had to go through all of it. He had to go through it all to overcome all of it. And then, in the giving of that overcoming spirit, he becomes a high priest that then ministers to us the very same life. Remember how it says he's a high priest that's not, he's acquainted with the way, with the weaknesses of the flesh. He's not like one who's a high priest who's not acquainted with our weaknesses. This is what Hebrews chapter 2 says. No, he's a high priest that knows how to minister his own overcoming power to us, having actually overcome in the very same circumstances, in the very same weaknesses, in the very same painful emotions, in the very same trials, in the very same day-to-day boring carpentry work every day, hammering with a hammer. Sorry, the audio just turned off again. Not sure what's going on here with the Wi-Fi. I just said that that's why Hebrews says, what was the verse I just mentioned?
Minister to us an indestructible.
Yeah, what was before that though? There was another verse I mentioned. Yeah, he became, oh, I forget. Yeah, that's what it was. That's why he became the perfect, he became the perfect author of our salvation. He was always perfect as the eternal Son of God, but he became the perfect author of our salvation by suffering, it says. That's what it says. By suffering what? By suffering everything the fall of man had brought into the human condition and beating it. Beating it, overcoming it. Take heart, I have overcome the world. And then what does he do when he's risen up? When he's risen up from that condition, having over, death couldn't hold him. Why could death not hold him? Because death had found nothing in him to hold on to. You see? And that's why he could leave death and sin and darkness and everything of man's fallen condition in the grave, come out, and then say, guess what? I'm gonna pour out this overcoming spirit on you, and I'm going to minister to my body, my own, as a head to my body. Everything that I've done is going to start coming down into the body, the whole overcoming, indestructible life of God. And so he becomes a priest forever, not ministering to us in the order of Aaron, the Levitical order, the various pictures and shadows of the Old Testament of this life. He becomes a minister forever in the order of Melchizedek, and that is a ministry of, it says, an indestructible life, an unstoppable life. You can't stop it. You can't overcome it. It's, some translations say endless, and it is endless, but it's endless because it's indestructible. It's endless because nothing can stop it. Do you see? Do you see? I think that's what the meaning of that word is there. It's an unstoppable life. In other words, nothing, none of your pains, none of your trials, none of your anguish, none of your confusion, none of your sin, none of your darkness, none of the ways that you've been tempted and overcome by Satan can overcome this spirit. Nothing of it. Because you've been joined to an overcoming Christ. And for that reason, he came. He came to overcome everything that man had been overcome by. And then to give you. And that's the part that, see, this is what Jesus is saying in Revelation chapter 20, chapter 3, verses 21, verse 21, I think. He said, look, you can overcome with me as I've overcome if you hold fast. The promise of overcoming is to all the churches in Revelation. But because he, this is what he says in Revelation 3, because I've overcome, you can overcome. Because my spirit is what's going to be working in you. And that's why he says now, our faith, or John says this, 1 John, our faith overcomes the world. Well, why does our faith overcome the world? Our faith overcomes the world because it joins us to the one who overcame the world. And if we will walk in faith or we will walk in the Spirit, then there is nothing that God cannot overcome in us. And I don't know about you guys, but that is such that is so much better to me than just a God who spent his anger on Christ and now isn't mad. That's so much stronger. That is God giving me a spirit that if I will just walk in it, if I'll just submit my life to it, if I'll just turn my mind to it, if I'll just walk by faith, then I am joining myself to an unstoppable spirit. And that unstoppable spirit is an overcomer. And that's the reason, I believe, why abiding in Christ, abiding in Christ, not just believing in Christ, not just having a mental assent to these facts, but actually learning to turn to and stay in and submit yourself to and follow. That spirit is going to lead you from one degree of victory to another. It is going to overcome one thing after another, just like all of the things throughout the life of Christ that were thrown at him as obstacles and as enemies and as temptations and as weaknesses, that man crumples before those things. Jesus, before his cross, he said, "Look, the spirit is willing, guys, but your flesh is not able to get this done. Can't do it. You need my overcoming spirit." And so, anyway, just maybe to wrap up these thoughts, I just when I think about now, how did Jesus overcome? He overcame by a continued submission to his Father in all things. And he overcame things that I think would have overcome any one of us. Then how do we overcome? We overcome as well by a continual, careful, watchful, inward submission to his spirit in all things. And I believe that will carry us through to a complete victory.